जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरा वन सारी। यमुना तीरा वन सारी। जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्त श्री श्रीमारे श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि गौर समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। आगुरु श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, text number 56. Word meanings, ata api, although they come to attack, abhi bhavanti, they are able to kill, enam, this boy, na, not, eva, certainly, te, all of them, ghora darshana, very fierce looking, jighangsaya, because of envy, enam unto Krishna, asajya, approaching, nashyanti, are vanquished, death occurs to the aggressor, agnau, in fire, patangavat, like flies. Atapya bhavantyenam naivate goradarshana yighangshayainam asadya. What happened? Oh, you somehow, the first lines are the same. This is text 56. 10, 11, 56. Oh, you went to 57. No, that's not it. That's 55. Just scroll down to 56. There it is. Okay. Third line. Jighang shayainam asadya. Nasyantyagno patangavat. Atapya biva vantyenam. Naivate ghora darshana jighang sayainam asadya nasyantyagna patangavat atapya bhibhavantyenam naivate ghora darshana Yigangsayainam asadya Nasyantyagna patangavat Atatya viva vantyenam Naivate vuradarshana Ladies. students. Atapi viva vantyenam naiva te gurudarshana jighansayaina masadhyo nasyantyagno patangavat. Translation. So this is Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. They've just seen or heard of Krishna killing Bokasura, the duck demon or the crane demon. So now they're making different comments about Krishna and his what he does. Although the causes of death, the daityas, were very fierce, they could not kill this boy, Krishna. Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys, as soon as they approached, they themselves were killed, exactly like flies attacking a fire. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Nanda Maharaj innocently thought, perhaps this boy Krishna formerly killed all these demons, and therefore in this life they are envious and are attacking him. But Krishna is a fire, and they are flies. And in a fight between fire and flies, the fire is always victorious. Fighting is always taking place between the demons and the power of the Supreme Personality. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam. Bhagavad Gita 4:8. Anyone who is against the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be killed life after life. Ordinary living beings are subject to karma, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always victorious over the demons. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Hatapya Bivavantyenam Naivate Ghora Darshanaha Digang sayaina masadya nasyan tyagno patangavat. Although the causes of death, the daityas, were very fierce, they could not kill this boy. Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys, as soon as they approached, they themselves were killed, exactly like flies attacking a fire. In literature, one of the ways to get people's attention when you're writing a book is that you start right with the action. In the middle of the action, it's called. So the book, it opens up with, and I was walking down the street and someone was behind me and I heard footsteps. And then it cuts back, it says, I was born, no, no, no. So the whole book you're waiting, oh, when's this scene going to happen again? So we find in the 10th canto, Krishna gets right into the action. He doesn't wait very long. Right from the beginning, practically, we hear about some dangerous things taking place. Of course, Vasudeva and Devaki, and Kamsa is raising the sword, ready to cut off Devaki's head. And then as soon as Krishna's born, practically, demons start attacking. So right from the beginning of his life, we get action. When Krishna gets older, then he calms down and talks philosophy, Bhagavad Gita. But in the beginning, he's just playing. Of course, this is all play for Krishna. One thing we hear in the beginning of the Bhagavatam is that Krishna, he comes here actually to kill people. Doesn't sound like a very nice thing. But he does it because there's a need. Here probably quotes in this purport, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam. These are Krishna's two main businesses. Paritranaya sadhunam means he protects his devotees. And in order to protect his devotees, this word paritranaya, pari, the word pari means all around. So he protects in all circumstances, from all sides, in every way, Krishna protects the sadhus or the devotees. And in order to do that, he has to kill those who are always fighting. As Prabhupada says here, the demons and the devotees, they're always fighting. It's the demons who are instigating it. Devotees have no interest in fighting. They see everybody as friends. This is one of Prahlad Maharaj's observations. That's why when Prahlad Maharaj was a little boy and going to school, and his teachers were trying to teach him about governing and politics, which includes fighting, he said, "I can't accept this because I see everybody as my friend. How can I fight with anybody?" So the devotees, they're not interested in fighting. They don't have this attitude. But non-devotees who have bad qualities, they're always angry and frustrated and violent. They have these qualities, which aren't nice, not attractive. And they're always causing trouble, like monkeys. Prabhupada used to refer to monkeys as an example of this. Monkeys are always so active. When you see them, they're jumping here and there, and running around, and all doing things. But all they do is cause mischief all the time. So the demons are like that too, just always causing mischief. So the devotees are sometimes in danger, and Krishna comes to protect them. So that's what Krishna did when he came to this world 5,000 years ago. He actually came with that purpose, getting rid of these people who are causing so much trouble. Sometimes you just have to get rid of them when there's something bad. So he did that, and that was one of the main things he did throughout his presence here on earth. Of course, he came especially because there were so many big armies, and these big armies were just fighting all the time. Maybe the soldiers were dying, but we know whenever that happens, it's not only the soldiers who suffer in the battle, it's all the women and children and families, the whole society. Whenever there's a violent act, there's always, in the military, what they euphemistically call collateral damage. It means you try to hit the target, but there are other things that are going to get hurt at the same time. So whenever there's violence, it's not only the victim of the crime or the violence who suffers, but anybody who associates with them. They also suffer. So all of society was suffering because of these military, these big armies trampling the earth. Even Bhumi Devi herself, she said, "I just feel the weight of all these armies. I feel overburdened by them. Please deliver me from this weight." So Krishna was actually very thankful when he got the opportunity to fight. Prabhupada gives the example. He says the Kshatriyas are like that. Of course, Krishna, we're hearing he's a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, but later he plays the role of Kshatriya. So Kshatriyas, they like the opportunity because they train. They spend their whole lives training for war, so they're happy. Oh, even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, the Kshatriyas are happy when they get the opportunity to fight. What's the matter with you? Now you have an opportunity to fight and you want to run away? You're a Kshatriya. This isn't right. Hridayak Dorbalyam says you're showing weakness of heart. So the Kshatriyas, they actually look forward to it. Prabhupada compares, he says it's just like also a sportsman, someone who's into sports. They practice all the time, but sometimes they want to have a game. They want actual competition. Enough of just kicking the ball around all day. I want to play a game with somebody and have some competition. So Krishna looks forward to the opportunity, and because it's his mission to clear up this mess, then he's happy when he gets the opportunity. We all know how Jarasandha, later in Krishna's pastimes, Jarasandha, he was such a fool, an idiot, that he kept fighting with Krishna and losing thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of soldiers. He would get completely, his whole army would get completely wiped out. And Krishna wouldn't lose one soldier. So you'd think he'd say, "Well, this is hopeless. I'm not going to fight with him again." Just like if you play a game and you get beat 100-0, you probably say, "I'm going to go home. I'm not going to play against this person again." But just Jarasandha, he'd never get it. Or maybe for a minute he'd say, "Oh boy, this isn't a good idea." Then his friends would say, "No, you just had a bad day, that's all. Try again tomorrow." So he would get another whole big army together, and he'd attack Krishna again, and the same thing would happen. So you'd think, all right, two or three times he'd give up. But no, 17 times. Is that what it was? 17 times. He kept coming back. And Krishna was happy because he didn't have to go anywhere. His job was to get rid of all these soldiers, all these armies, and Jarasandha was bringing him right to his door. So he was doing some service to Krishna by bringing all these soldiers so Krishna could wipe them out. So that's part of what Krishna does. Now this may sound dreadful. God is killing. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Mrityu sarvaharaschaham." I am death. So he's killing everybody. We would live forever. We could live forever, but Krishna is death. Of course, this is part of how this material world is designed. We can't live here forever. Krishna has made it so that death will occur. By the laws of karma, we have to die. We can't live forever. The nature of these material bodies is that they don't live forever. So Krishna actually is killing everyone. But in his pastimes, when he comes, he does it in spectacular ways. And we see also how the devotees react. If this were a bad act, if it's violent, then we just want to turn away. We don't want to see it. People faint when they see something really violent sometimes. It's so shocking to the system because we're not used to it. So if you see the gore, and we read in some of the later pastimes where rivers of blood, and the faint-hearted, they can't look at that. The kshatriyas, they cheer and roar. But the faint-hearted or ordinary persons even, they're not attracted to that. So in Krishna's pastimes, he's killing all these demons. But what's happening? The demigods are showering flowers and the boys and cheering. They're having like a festival. Because what are they cheering about? They're cheering about Krishna, really. How wonderful Krishna is that he's able to do this. So in this particular pastime, we have this nice example that Prabhupada gives. He says the verse actually, just like flies attracted to a fire. We know this example that happens. The moth or some insect sees a fire and thinks, "Oh, I like light. Let me fly into the light." It's like flies. Actually, flies don't fly at night. I learned this trick one time in India. We were in a room. There were all kinds of flies. It was a small room. And fortunately, we could black out everything. So we blacked out, we closed out all the window curtains and made it completely dark in there. And then we just opened a little crack in the door and all the flies went outside. And they go to the light. You may notice at night the flies are bothering you. If you turn the lights off, then no flies. Mosquitoes is another thing. They fly in the dark, but the flies don't fly in the dark. So they like the light. They fly towards the light. But what happens if the light happens to be a fire? Then they get burned up. They're not smart enough to realize, apparently. So the same thing is going on here with these demons. They're flying towards the light of Krishna, thinking, oh, they also want the opportunity to kill. That's what they like to do. These demons were very, very horrible people. Or people not exactly human, some of them. They had some kind of mystic power. They could do things, extraordinary things. They had extraordinary abilities to kill. That was their expertise. The very first demon in Krishna's Leela, besides Kamsa, was Putana. Krishna was just a little baby, not even walking yet, not even crawling yet, I think. So Krishna's just a little baby and Putana comes to kill him. So what was Putana's claim to fame? She was expert at killing children. That's what she liked to do. And she apparently had some kind of great power because she was a Kechari witch. K, what is the word K? K-H-E means the sky or ether. Shabda K, Paurusham Narshu. Shabda K, Krishna says, I am the sound in ether. So Kachari means she could move through the ether. Now, that, and it's talking about this, Prabhupada says there were some witches still, he says, they could fly on the limb of an uprooted tree. So apparently the tree has to be dead, and they like the dead tree. Take a root from that. That's the, it tends to be the nature of demoniac persons. They like dead things, they like ghastly things. Here in this verse we have the word ghora darshana. Darshana means to see, or what they look like. Ghora, ghora means ghastly, horrible. So they're often horrible looking. So they are attracted to bad things, ugly things, violent things. So they like dead things, like dead trees. I've noticed sometimes that vultures, they like dead trees. I drive here sometimes, I see there's one particular tree that's dead, and I often see vultures hanging out in that particular tree. So they associate with that kind of mode of ignorance, the modes of ignorance and passion. So these are all, we can see how just in nature there's good and bad. And the devote, that we have icha and dvesha, which means we have attraction to certain things according to our nature, and we're repulsed by certain things. We don't like certain things. Or to put it simply, we like some things, and we don't like other things. So the things the devotees like are the good things, pious things, things in the mode of goodness as described in Bhagavad Gita, good food, things that are produced naturally from the nature, the bounty of nature. Not horrible, ghastly things like what comes out of the slaughterhouse, blood and all the gore and so on. How can you be attracted to that? So it says something about your nature. So if you're attracted to killing innocent persons, then Krishna takes special interest, especially if you're really good at it. This when I read the last line of this purport, I couldn't quite understand what Prabhupada said. I felt like I had to sort of course, as an editor, I'm always looking at things in a certain way. But the verse says, the line says, ordinary living beings are subject to karma, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always victorious over the demons. So I was saying, what's the connection between the two parts of this sentence? I couldn't quite see it at first. So I think that what Prabhupada is saying here is that ordinary living beings, their karma takes care of them. In other words, Maya takes care of them. They're killed just by the ordinary course of nature. They die in certain ways because of their karma in this world, whether it's disease or some accident or whatever, their karma takes over and they die because of that. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always victorious over the demons. So I assume that the point Prabhupada is making here is that for the demons, Krishna himself comes. If they're really big shot demons, then Krishna himself comes and gets rid of them. So this naturally raises the question, there seem to be some pretty bad demons in recent history. Why didn't Krishna come and take care of them? Well, for one thing, it wasn't his time. He comes at a scheduled time. Scheduled incarnations, they're called. We have that chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna comes on his schedule, which he made. He wrote the schedule. So he comes in time, kills the demons around at that time. There happened to be a lot of them. But the other thing is, well, actually, we think about these big demons. I was thinking of Hitler. Of course, he's the emblem of the demoniac person. I was thinking just the enormity of what he did. He killed, was it 6 million people? 6 million people. That's a lot of people. But that was just the Jews. That was just the concentration camp had others besides Jews. But in any case, at least that many. What to speak of the war which he started, how many million more were killed just in the war itself. So all of these people, it's a lot of people. I was trying to conceive of it. If you ever see a picture or on television, like a stadium, a big sports stadium. So it might hold 50,000 people. 50,000 people, that's a lot of people. So 6 million, can anybody do the division? How many is that? Or so let's say 60,000 people. That's what, 100 times or 1,000 times? That made so many more stadiums full of people were killed by this one demon. So what a horrible person he was. Of course, we've heard, I think it's even in writing somewhere, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that he was specifically empowered by Krishna. He was Shaktiavesh. He had the Shakti, the power to kill all of these people. Because unless you have great, well, all power comes from Krishna ultimately. But if you have power to do a lot, whether it's a lot of harm or a lot of good, that power is also coming from Krishna. So you might say he was doing Krishna's work also. But he's not getting credit for it, and not pious credit in this sense. Everything is Krishna's work, as I said. All killing is Krishna killing, whether it's murder or it's natural death. It's all being done by Krishna ultimately. So why didn't Krishna come down? Why didn't Kalki come early saying, well, I can't wait. I got to come now. Take my sword and cut this guy's head off. So, but Krishna has his own plan. We were hearing this morning how Krishna is inconceivable. Just like Bhishma Dev when he's lying on the bed of arrows and he's looking at the Pandavas and he's saying, now how is it these Pandavas, they're so pious, but they had to suffer so much. So he said, no one can understand the plan of the Lord. Even great philosophers inquire exhaustively and they're bewildered. Because he's Krishna, he's millions and billions and unlimitedly more times intelligent than we are. So how can we expect to understand what he's thinking unless he reveals it to us? So Krishna has his own reasons for coming. And in Kali Yuga, until the end, he doesn't kill. He lets the rascals go on. Prabhupada would often speak of these things in that way. Let the rascals do what they want to do. The Paramahamsa also has this vision. Let the rascals do what they want to do. There's even a verse that says there's really nothing wrong because everything is happening naturally. And Krishna is letting it go on. But still, of course, because Krishna has mercy, because he's merciful, he's the most infinitely merciful, he does do something in Kali Yuga. He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in Kali Yuga, he has different weapons. His weapons are his associates and his devotees and the holy name. He doesn't destroy by killing people with his sword or chakra or whatever. He kills a demoniac mentality. So that's also very effective. I was saying how, you know, it's so ghastly eating the slaughterhouse products, but many of us were doing that. That demoniac activity, we were also doing that, but that demoniac attraction was destroyed by the power of Lord Chaitanya's associate, Srila Prabhupada, and the chanting of the holy names. So this is our fortune in this age. First of all, we don't have to be super demons to get Krishna's attention. We can be small demons. And then we get Lord Chaitanya's attention. Even the devotees pray, there's nobody lower than me. There's nobody worse than I am. And nobody more fallen than I am. So you have to give me your mercy. You come to deliver the most fallen, so I'm the most fallen. So, but what is the deliverance? It's not killing. We saw in the pastime of Jagaya Madhai, Lord Chaitanya was actually ready to kill with his chakra, but Nityananda said, no, 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 put that thing away. Put that back in your holster. You don't do that in this forgetting who you are. Of course, Lord Chaitanya would sometimes do that, forget who he was, like he became Nrisingadev and started chasing everybody around. So he kind of forgot who he was for a moment, and Lord Nityananda had to remind him, no, in this age, you deliver them. Of course, what happened in this pastime, they became devotees, very great devotees, serving the Lord. So they became associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the... Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is still Krishna, but we don't hear leelas like this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We hear leelas of Sankirtan. So maybe because we're a little more... We get a little more queasy in this age. Can't handle it. So we have to see this leela. We see the Lord delivering his devotees. And we also, of course, follow suit. We don't have armies. We're not making big armies. That's not our plan. We also want to take over the world, in one sense, but we're not doing it with armies. Good thing we don't have to. But we're doing it... through Brahminical culture. That's our weapon. Ultimately, that's the most powerful thing. Brahma Tejas. Even in Vedic stories, we see Brahma Tejas. The power of Brahmana, the power of the mode of goodness, is more powerful than anything else. So the power of transcendental knowledge, that's the most powerful thing. Or the power of Krishna, ultimately. Krishna's holy name is Krishna himself. So this question also arises, well, if Krishna comes when there are demons around, why doesn't he come now? Because he's here already. He's here in the form of his holy name. And that can destroy the demoniac mentality without destroying the demons in a more aggressive or violent way. So the verse again, Atapya bibhavantyenam naivate ghora darshana jigangsayayanam asadya nasyantyagnao patangavat. Although the causes of death, the daityas, were very fierce, they could not kill this boy Krishna. Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys, as soon as they approached, they themselves were killed, exactly like flies attacking a fire. Any questions or comments? Dharmaraj Prabhu?
So, it appears to me that if you compare these demons, as mentioned here, and with Hitler, what you are citing, it appears as though there is a gulf of a difference, that with Hitler, who he was killing and destroying was just like ordinary sudras, for example. But with these demons in Krishna's time, they were directly attacking the pious people and the devotees. Mm-hmm. So just wondering if you can give some light on that.
I'm sure there are a few devotees among those 6 million, but maybe not exactly Hare Krishna devotees. But yes, of course, Krishna takes it more personally, you might say, when they're attacking his own people. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, I'm equal to everyone. But for my devotee, the one who becomes my ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, mai te teshu chapyaham. That person is in me or I in there, and I am in them. And Prabhupada says, and he is a friend. So when you become Krishna's devotee, then Krishna takes special interest, in you. Paritranaya sadhunam. So he especially wants to protect his devotees, and most especially those who are his closest associates, his most dear devotees, he's going to show a little extra intolerance, you might say, in dealing with them. So that comes out in these pastimes. Haladhar Prabhu?
This is just a comment about, for perspective. Hitler did, by the way, execute a lot of, or the Nazis executed a lot of clergy. But nowadays, we're living in the United States of America, and for perspective, there are over 1 million persons killed here through abortion.
Yeah.
So we have a big job to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's extremely demoniac activity. And whether you get killed by somebody's sword or you just die, of course, people are also dying today in horrible ways. Long, drawn-out deaths. In some ways you think, boy, it's better to have your head cut off than to go for years being eaten up by cancer or some other horrible disease. So karma can do you in pretty drastic ways. So there's no question that, and we don't necessarily have armies right now roaming everywhere, but we have lots of people who are dying in bad ways. So the reactions are coming for these sinful acts that are going on.
Right here. Thank you for your class.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize the number was 6 million, so that's pretty enlightening to me for Hitler. I was a little bit bewildered by your comment that Hitler was, I mean, I think he incurred like a lot of karma, and he made the choice to like kill all those people. And I would think he will get karmic reactions for that in a big way. So I was a little bit bewildered by your statement about Krishna sanctioning that. I mean, when we make a choice, even if it's like something that's going to cause a karmic reaction, that Krishna sanctions that. So is that kind of what you're saying? Like, but
well, there are two ways to look at it. I was quoting Bhaktisiddhanta, and that the angle on that quote about Bhaktisiddhanta, I'm pretty sure I'm not making this up. I'm pretty sure I read this somewhere where he said that. And the point of that is, by saying that he was empowered by Krishna, is that, which I made in the class, was that unless you're, you know, to do something as big as that, you have to get the power from Krishna, otherwise you can't do it. So maybe, you know, his desire, you can say Krishna was responding to his desire. Now, of course, this becomes it's a hard thing to understand, because in some sense, we don't want to be callous, but we all get what we deserve in one sense. So I remember years ago, Mataresh wrote an article. He said, is that the way we look at things? We say, you know, if somebody suffers in some horrible way, do we just look and say, well, they're just getting what they deserve, too bad? But we don't think that way. We don't. But still, I mean, everybody, there's nothing, there's no injustice, ultimately.
But isn't it like somebody could die prematurely because of someone else's negligence? You know, not necessarily because they deserve that, but someone else is incurring karma. Like,
well, I'll openly admit I don't understand karma. Because, how can that be? I mean, Krishna is overseeing everything. How can something happen to somebody that's not sanctioned by Krishna? That's not what, you know, according to their karma. Everything happens according to karma. And karma, as far as I understand it, it's a very strict 1 + 1 = 2 in karma. It doesn't change. Now, when Krishna gets involved personally, then he changes. So devotees, they're under Krishna. And we sometimes call it Krishna karma. So basically, Krishna takes, or he can do anything with what we're supposed to get. He can change it all around, or he delivers, or whatever. We're in Krishna's, or under Krishna's control. But everybody else, if you're not surrendering to Krishna, trying to become Krishna conscious, become a devotee. Now, who fits in that category? That's another question. You know, is everybody outside the Hare Krishna movement a karmi, and they don't get Krishna's protection? Then we get into gray areas. But the principle is, just like here in this verse, prophet says that karma is taking care of things. So karma means Maya, and she has certain guidelines or strict rules, actually, under which she works. So, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If you do this, you get this reaction. So, if you're dying in a particular way, that's a reaction to something that you did. So, but the thing is, Prabhupada uses the word innocent citizens. So you say, well, how is anybody innocent? What does that mean? I've never understood what that means. How can anybody be innocent if everything is happening to us because of our karma? And if you research it, you'll see over and over and over again, Prabhupada makes this point. Just like Prahlad, when he's instructing his classmates, one of the first lessons he tells them is, he says, don't try for happiness. This comes up in the first canto too, because your happiness is already destined. You're going to get a certain amount of happiness and a certain amount of distress. And just like you don't try to get distress, you don't need to try to get happiness, because you're going to get a certain amount anyway. So just try to be Krishna conscious. So that's already destined. Your lifespan is also destined, how long you're going to live. Sometimes the example is given, it's just like a clock that's wind up and it's ticking down. So eventually it's going to stop ticking. But then in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about eating foods that increase the duration of life. So I think, well, what? How can you? I thought it was already predestined. So karma to me is a mind-boggling. I don't really understand all these things, how they all fit together. But yeah, I mean, it's nice. I mean, in fact, a devotee wrote us an article about the Holocaust, and he didn't take the strict line that this was their karma. But we felt uncomfortable with that, devotees who review articles to BTG, because it seems to be the way Prabhupada explains things. If something happens to you, it's because of your karma. It's because of something that you did in the past. So yeah, it's a complicated subject. Don't think I can give a definitive answer on it. Now, the devotees, of course, there's a way we can look at it and say, well, you know, this is all gyan in a certain way. And really, the devotees are about compassion. So naturally, the devotee's compassionate heart is to think, oh, these are innocent people. We can't. Obviously, we don't rejoice in it, or we're not just cold-hearted about it. Devotees also have compassion, which is another whole question about, well, how can you have compassion if people are just getting what they deserve anyway? It means they did something bad. I remember years ago, we were living in San Diego. I remember hearing about something really atrocious. And I was thinking, what happened was a man set his own child on fire, poured gasoline on him and set him on fire. And I thought, well, in the next life, something really bad is going to happen to this person. Maybe he's going to be a child and someone's going to set him on fire. People are going to think, oh, this poor innocent child. But, well, he's not innocent because he did the same thing in the past. Just like in this, it's actually right in this, in the purport, or the Prabhupada says, Nanda Maharaj is thinking that, you know, these demons are coming to attract these boys, or as Ananda Maharaj is saying, they're attacking. That means we must have attacked them, or the boys must have attacked them in the previous life. That's the way Ananda Maharaj is looking at the situation. If something is happening to me, that means I must have done something bad to that person. That's the philosophical way to look at it. But then there's the more compassionate way where you just think, whatever is behind all of this in the technical sense, we still don't want to see people suffer. So let's just give them Hare Krishna, give them the Maha Mantra, give them spiritual life, deliver them whatever the cause was, because it's so intricate. Even in the Vedas it says, you're never going to be able to figure it out. It's so involved and intricate. And there are so many factors involved. So we just say, get out of this place. That was Bhaktisiddhanta's solution. This is no place for a gentleman. Just get out of here and try to help as many other people go too. When I was raised at a religious school, we had this saying, don't go to heaven alone, bring someone with you. So that's also our motto, you might say. We want to get out and we want to bring as many people as we can, and then they won't have to suffer anymore, whatever the intricacies of this world that are causing these things to happen. Radhikarani,
isn't it? I know it's such a complicated subject, but it's something that renders a lot of thought and discussion. But compassion, it seems, of the devotees actually can break karmic cycles, isn't it?
Is what?
Isn't that the compassion and the action of the pure devotees and their representatives can actually transform people's karma? I mean, isn't that what we're trying to do, is get out of this material world? Isn't that breaking the
karmic cycle?
Yeah,
we can change people's
cycle?
Karma. You give people, like Prabhupada said, just like if someone just touches a book, then their life is successful. Because as soon as one begins one's spiritual life by contacting Krishna or contacting the pure devotee, then they've begun their journey back to Godhead. So their next life as a human being is guaranteed. And there's instant purification there. Someone just takes a simply wonderful, that famous talk of Prabhupada's about simply wonderful. So there's transformation. So that's how we demonstrate compassion, of course, by giving Krishna consciousness in whatever way we can and purifying people. And it can actually change what's happening what's going to happen to them in their lives. Because, again, the idea is that, well, Krishna starts taking special interest when someone's spiritual life begins in that way. All right, so I think we should stop here. We're past time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.